This is the ColoradoHockey.com podcast brought to you by AbsFam, absfam.com, for the coolest hockey shirts you won't find anywhere else because they're only available at AbsFam, absfam.com. Today we have an in-between episode for you with Ed Burkholder, who is not just a man of many talents and a man of many jobs, but he is the man behind Check Yourself, Express Yourself. The goal of Check Yourself, Express Yourself is to bring awareness to testicular cancer. Early detection of testicular cancer, like any other cancer, can mean a life saved. It's absolutely vital that you check yourself and you be aware of what's going on with your body, and when the time comes or if you have any questions or concerns, you go see somebody who can help you. Ed Burkholder is many things. He owns two businesses, he's a pro scout, and he's a color commentator. But most impressively, Ed is a survivor of cancer. It didn't take us long to realize that Ed was one of those hockey minds that you want to get to know because he does things that other people don't. He's a color commentator and a pro scout all at the same time. He runs a hockey camp and he played hockey his whole life. Ed knows a thing or two about hockey, and we were lucky enough to get him on the line to talk for over an hour. So without further ado, here's Ed Burkholder. When you are at a party, you're hanging out with people that you maybe know, maybe don't, maybe it's a Christmas party, and they ask you, what do you do for a living? What do you tell people?
Well, I mean, I own a business in Welland. First of all, I own another business with Burkholder Hockey, which is guest speaking, hockey clinics, and merchandise. It's not like asking the regular person what they do because I don't have one job, right? I have two businesses. I have a broadcasting career, and I have a scouting career in hockey. So it keeps me on my toes.
And are you still coaching as well at some level?
I don't, no. I haven't coached probably, I would say, 5 years now.
Okay, so you still got a lot going on. I mean, you represent a lot of the corners of the hockey universe out there. A lot of knowledge in that, I'm guessing.
Yeah, and it's kind of a neat position to be in because the broadcasting ties in with the scouting, you know, being in the rink. The broadcasting, I find, is a great way to still be involved in the game where, you know, you have that game day rituals that you go through and getting to the rink early and preparing for it. I'm getting a lot of joy out of that. I'm in my ninth year with the OHL tonight. We cover the Niagara Ice Dogs in the OHL. And so that is something that I really look forward to doing.
So most of the people who listen to this are Avalanche fans. They're hockey fans in general, but pretty specific to the Avalanche. Are there any lines we could draw from the Ice Dogs to the Avalanche that you know of?
Well, there's, you know, Andrew Agostino.
Yeah.
So he was a Niagara Ice Dog. He was actually the captain of the Niagara Ice Dogs going back a few years. And I know he started with Lake Erie, which is your American League team, right?
It was up until last year. Now we are in San Antonio with the Rampage.
That's right. They did all that revamping. So, you know, he's one of those guys that, you know, came into the league and had an immediate impact. I mean, he paid his dues, obviously, in the OHL, but he's just one of the hardest working hockey players I've ever seen play. And to see him get rewarded with some NHL time is fantastic. I think he'll, as the years go on, he'll become more valuable in Colorado's organization.
I hope so. I mean, there's a lot of guys who I think that were at least at one point thought very highly of, and we'll see how that works with Waugh's decision process and what he wants to do. But yeah, Agostino came up for a couple of games, and he didn't look that bad. I think he's having a good year in San Antonio, too.
Yeah,
but yeah, there's a lot of people looking at our minor leagues, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, the American League to the NHL is not as big a jump as people think. You know, there's a lot of players in the American Hockey League that, you know, given the opportunity to play, they could do well at the NHL level. The biggest thing is getting that opportunity.
I think so. And sometimes it's the situation they're walking into as well. I mean, a lot of times I think these guys get a call up when things aren't going well on the big team. And, you know, they're brought in to fill a hole or to fill in for somebody who's injured or somebody who's just being benched. So I like to see these guys come up when things are going well because they get a little bit better chance, I think, to show what they're worth.
Right, right.
We've got a guy named Jack Skilly who's up right now, and he is, in my opinion, the hardest working guy in hockey right now. He came on as a professional tryout and has just earned his ice time, and he impresses every time he's on the ice. Every second on the ice, he's working hard, and I think guys like that are underrated. But in particular, Jack Skilly has been really, really good for us.
Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned that he works hard every shift, right? And that's what you look for in a player that's going to play, you know, that same level of consistency every single time he's on the ice. when you can get a player like that, you know, the sky's the limit for his growth potential.
Yeah, and this guy, I mean, he's not a spring chicken. Well, not in hockey terms. I think he's 26, 27. So
right.
This is another one of those really cool stories where it, you know, you see a guy work hard and you see it pay off, and I think that's a really good lesson for anyone watching.
Well, there's a lot of great stories out there. Have you heard Matt Ellis's name before?
I haven't.
He's with the Buffalo organization, and he started playing in the OHL, and he went and worked his way up through the ECHL to the American Hockey League and with Detroit, and then he went on to LA, and then he's now in Buffalo, and he's another one of those guys where, you know, will over skill is going to get you there, and he finally made it to the NHL, and he's got, I don't know how many games he's played, Cam, but he has enough that, you know, he can call himself an NHL hockey player, you know, after the days are done, and watching him play is exciting because he's another guy that just goes out there every single shift and does his job. And does it to the best of his ability and brings that high energy to the game. And it's exciting watching him play.
And, you know, I think that fans out there are educated and they respect that when they see it. I know that with Skilly in his situation, that people are cheering when he goes out there and just has a really good solid shift and he works hard and, you know, he spends more time in the offensive zone and forechecks. It's valuable stuff to an educated fan, I think.
Well, I think so too. And it's, you know, we love seeing the underdog succeed. We love seeing someone that's paid their dues succeed, and you know, to see someone that wasn't handed anything that they had to go and work for it and fulfill their dream is pretty special to watch.
Yeah, I think so too. So let me ask you then. I've done a little bit of research on you. I find you pretty fascinating, actually. You seem to always be hustling in one direction or another, and you have some experience that I don't think other people do. And I was curious kind of how the playing career came to an end and then what came next. And I think it was color from that point, or was that coaching right out of when you stopped playing?
Well, when I stopped playing, I got into coaching like immediately. It was the very next year that a coach that coached me in midget asked me to coach with him. And then after that, I ended up taking over the team and was the head coach for 3 or 4 years. And it's, you know, that's a high level of hockey. It's the best 16-year-olds, right, that go on to get drafted or whatever the case. And that really built a foundation for coaching. I love coaching. I have a passion for it. But other things took over in my life, and one thing was getting into the scouting, right? I always had that dream of making it to the NHL. And as a player, obviously, I wasn't going to do it, so I had to find a way, and I felt that scouting was a way to do it. When I was playing midget, I had a scout from the London Knights. His name was Bob Giroux, and he asked to speak to me after a game in the Welland Arena. And I'll never forget it, Cam. It was you know, you meet this guy. He was a little older guy. Maybe he was 55, 60 at the time, and he handed me one of his cards. And he said that, you know, we're really impressed with your play. We're going to keep an eye on you, da-da-da-da. And I carried his card in my wallet, I bet you, for the next 3 or 4 years. You know, it had such a huge impact on me talking to the scout that really planted a huge seed in me that's something that I'd like to do when I got older. So after I kind of built my resume up a little bit with coaching, I sent my resume out to you know, every team that I could possibly think of, and that's what really got my foot in the door in the scouting. And I'll give you, you're going to have to go back in the archives, Cam, because if you remember a player that played for the Colorado Rockies named Barry Smith.
I do. I think he played at the same time as, what was his name? His last name's Cameron, that's how I remember him. But
he played for Cherry there when Don Cherry was the coach. And he played for Don Cherry when he was in Boston. And when Cherry went to Colorado, Barry Smith was one of the players that he brought with him. But Barry Smith called me, I think it was maybe in 2000. He called me and said he was coaching the San Angelo Outlaws in the Southern Professional Hockey League. And he said, Ed, I need a fighter, and I need him tomorrow. I sent him a guy, his name is Imre Matthias, who I coached in midget. And Imre was on a plane the next day, and he ended up you know, doing well that year for him and did his job and ended up playing in the ECHL, as a matter of fact. Imrie went on to a higher level. So that's really what started me in scouting, as far as my first job was with San Angelo. And the following year after that, I got hired in Greenville with the ECHL team.
So how many times did you hear no before you heard a yes when it came to being a scout? And you had sent out your resume like anyone would for a job in this case. Is that right?
Yeah. You know,
I think some people, me included, get the idea that you just get tapped by the right person or you're in the right place at the right time. And I think it's a little bit of a misguidance to people who want to do this sort of thing, who are interested in contributing to hockey in some way other than playing.
Yeah, so, you know, you have to put your, you know, you have to put your dues in, right, as far as getting your resumes out there, trying to contact as many people as you can. You know, if you're talking to me, Cam, if you want to be a scout, then you got to get in the rinks, right? And you got to meet people and you got to put your resume at people's desk and let them know who you are and what you're all about. I mean, is it tough to get in? Absolutely. Because scouting, a lot of it is trust, right? Like if you're going to scout on my staff, I need to trust your hockey judgment.
Is it just that, or is there a certain amount of allegiance, or what's the word I'm looking for? Are they worried that you're going to be a scout, but then you're going to leave them and go scout for somebody else and take your scouting knowledge, especially that knowledge that has to do with that club, with you? Is that ever an issue?
You know what? I don't think so. I've never seen that side of the game. I've only seen actually the opposite, to tell you the truth. When you're talking to true hockey guys, they don't think that way. They think, if you can help our hockey team, that's going to be great. And if we can get you on to a better job in the future, then that's a great thing.
That's,
you know, and that's why you do see scouts that end up getting with a different organization and hired as head scout or assistant general manager or whatever the case is. You know, you're in hockey to get as high as you can, right? That's what you want to do if that's your goal. I know a lot of scouts that are 65 years old now that they just wanted to be a scout. They were happy being a scout. That's what they feel their purpose was, and they've done a great job. So that whole lobster's boiling in a pot syndrome, where, you know, one guy tries to get out and the other one pulls one in, I don't think it really ties in with the hockey, with the game of hockey, at least the game of hockey that I know. You know, it's one of those things that, is there a hockey fraternity? Absolutely. But it's why anyone can join, right? It's not a closed thing. It's you have to have a love for the game. You have to have knowledge for the game. And I don't think you can really get that from a book, right? So there's a lot of different aspects to that, but I think for the entire, getting to that next level is a big thing. And I've had guys that have helped me that I've worked for that have made calls to another team, you know, to say, look at, you know, this guy is ready to get to the next level.
Oh, interesting. So I was actually going to follow up on that a little bit and ask you, yeah, in the same way that guy gave you his card and kind of helped you. And it's definitely one of those things you're going to remember when you're 80 on your porch in your rocking chair. I mean, it's kind of a life defining moment. Have you done that for anyone else, or do you feel like you will?
I hope I have done. I don't know if I've done that. That only that other person knows. But when you talk to a player, man, it's one of my favorite jobs. One of my favorite jobs is signing a player that you've looked at. And for the team I work for, the Toledo Walleye, who's Detroit's farm team in the ECHL, to go through their agent or go through that long process of signing someone and finally being able to say welcome to the Walleye is something that's hard to explain to someone. It's a great feeling. But I think, you know, when you're a scout, I think you have the tools to really build someone's confidence, Cam. You know, you can use it for the professional league that you're in, but there's a lot of times I've used it to talk to younger players. I might get a coach that says, hey, Ed, this young guy's struggling a little bit with his confidence, but, you know, if we can get him confident, he's going to be, you know, one of our best players on our team, or, you know, situations like that, that you can step in and have a conversation with a younger player, you know, and give them your card and to watch them light up is something pretty special.
It sounds like it. And I imagine when you sign a guy in particular, I mean, you're helping him get to the next level. That's a big deal for a guy who, I think almost every player has big dreams. I mean, they want to be in the big show, and it's
for
not
sure.
realistic for everyone. And I'm going to bounce around on here a little bit because it makes sense in this conversation. But what do you tell guys like that? I mean, is there a certain amount of level setting you do with people, or do you just encourage them, hey, if you want to play in the NHL, then keep going for it. Skate every day, practice hard, you know, work on your skills. Or do you have to talk to some guys and say, look, if you love the game, you're going to get to play the game, but it may not be at the level you want, and that has to be okay with you.
Yeah, I mean, like, the biggest thing, if you have to tell at that level, if you have to tell someone to work hard or, you know, do this or do that, it's going to be, chances are, it's not going to be a guy you're going to have on your team.
Gotcha. And I guess I was kind of leaning a little bit on your other professions where you have your hockey camp and you see a lot of really young guys. So maybe not in the context of the 16-year-olds that you coached, but you know, these young guys with stars in their eyes still. And, you know, they don't really have to deal with things like paying rent, getting food and all that. They just live and breathe hockey.
Yeah. You know, when you talk to younger guys that are playing the game, that are trying to get to the next level, you know, the biggest thing, and you touched upon it, is work ethic, right? Because there's that saying, be a pro now. You know,
right.
Be a pro now, meaning, you know, you could be in high school, you could be in the OHL, and you need to develop those habits. Now, when you're at the NHL level, a coach doesn't have to say, I need you working on your shot, or I need you working on this, or I need, because you're a pro. A coach is not going to tell you, hey, make sure you eat chicken and pasta, you know, at 2 o'clock on game day. You don't need to be told that because you're a pro. And pros come ready to work. Pros come to the rink ready to work. They come in shape. Their body is a machine, and they put the right fuel in it. They're going to do what they have to do to prepare for that game or practice or whatever the case is. And that's what you want to instill in the younger kids, that, hey, these guys don't have it easy in the pro ranks. They work hard. They train their body. They put the right food in their body. They spend hours on video. They do a lot of things to prepare for that game. It's not just showing up and playing hockey. You know, if you look at a game day in pro hockey, the coaches are starting early morning. The trainers are sometimes there all night getting everything ready. The players come for early morning skate and a meeting, and then they have lunch together. And it's constant information that they're prepping for that specific team that's coming into town, right? So they dissect their power play. They dissect their penalty kill. They dissect their forecheck. They dissect their back check. They know everything about these. They know who's strongest on the faceoff. They know the goaltender's weak points. These are all things, when you get into the details, that pros do every single day. It's part of the job. And, you know, when you go to a game and you got your, you know, your Pepsi and your popcorn, a lot of people aren't thinking that. They don't know how much preparation went into these hockey games, you know, and that's a big part of it. So if you can instill into a player that's in midget that, you know, whether it's working on your individual skills, whether it's working on being a better teammate, whatever the case is, that's what you need to develop and become habit, so that when that scout is sitting in the stands and they say, like you said about that player that got called up to Colorado, that he does something exciting every shift. You have to be that player that's going to catch that scout's eye.
Yeah, Jack Skelly, just amazing guy. So I love what you're saying, but I have to dig in a little bit and unpack this. As a scout, you mentioned a lot of things there, a lot of things I would call kind of success metrics. If they have this, then they're in a good spot. Do you actually have a matrix you work from, or is everything kind of gut feel for you when you're looking at a player as a scout?
Well, you know, when the level that I scout, Cam, is these guys are all hometown heroes, right? They're the best of the best to be playing in the league they're in. So they have the skill. You know, everyone can shoot the puck. Everyone can skate well. Everyone can, you know, do those little things well. So do you look at, obviously, the higher skilled than the others? Absolutely. But the biggest thing is, what does that player do every shift? Right? Every shift. Does he carry out his assignments, regardless if the game is 1-1 or the game is 6-1? Is he playing the same level of hockey? Right? What's his body language like? The biggest rule I go for is as a scout, you can't go looking for players. That player has to find you.
And that's through their play and their performance and their response to adversity and things like that?
And really, really think about that, right? Is that you can't go looking at a player. That player has to find you. Because if you have to make notes, and I go through it where I have to make notes on, you know, player A, player B, player C, player D, and it's tough because you're sitting there going, I watched this guy play for 60 minutes, and I got nothing. Right? Like, I don't even know what to write on my paper.
So how do you come to watch a guy? How do you end up in the same building as him? Is it known that this is, do you watch every team, or do you get a hunch and you go follow somebody? How does that work?
I cover the NCAA in our area, and I cover the OHL in our area, and CIS, which is Canadian University Hockey. So, you know, I know the specific players that we are looking at, meaning like an age level, a free agent. So if you're a player that's been drafted, obviously, the first round of Colorado, I'm not going to be looking at you because I'm scouting for an ECHL team right now.
Right.
Right? So I'm looking for that. Maybe it was a player that was drafted but has gone now unsigned. Right? The player that drafted him decided not to sign him. Mm-hmm. It could be a 19 or a 20-year-old that is a free agent. So, you know, as long as I have those players in those leagues taken care of, then that's my job. So that if our director of hockey operations or our head coach calls and says, what do you think of Mikhail Agard from Sudbury? I'll be able to say, you know, I've seen him play 5 times already. These are his high points. These are his low points. And at the end of the day, they'll say, should we sign him, yes or no? And I give him a yes or no.
So can you just give me an example of what a high and a low point would be? Like, his skating or his physical play, something like that?
Yeah, exactly. You know, like, it could be, you know, he's unbelievable with the puck. He needs to mature defensively.
Gotcha.
Right?
Okay.
And everyone has those things. Like, when I was with the Detroit Red Wings working with their amateur draft, there was Brendan Smith, who is a defenseman in their organization now, plays with Detroit. Have you heard of him?
I haven't.
He's a good defenseman in the NHL. When we first looked at him in Tier 2 Junior A, he was a guy that offensively was very gifted. You know, like, as far as a D-man, he's going to be up on the rush. He's going to provide that fourth man on the rush. He's a scoring threat when he's on the ice. It's just in his own end, man, he had a lot of maturing to do. So he committed to Wisconsin in the NCAA, played 4 years there, and we knew that those 4 years he was going to mature and learn the defensive game. But when you find a guy like that, you can't teach a defenseman to be offensive.
Right.
You know, he's either got it or he doesn't. But yeah. You could teach a defenseman to be defensive.
So with Colorado, we have a defensive problem. I don't know how up you are on all the NHL teams, in particular the Avalanche, but defense is a big deal here right now. What we see is a lot of guys come in here with really, really great skills, but for some reason it doesn't work, or it doesn't work right away. And what I've been kind of hypothesizing and talking to people about is, it's one thing to know what you have to do and to know what the game plan is, but to be able to go out and execute it every single night, especially when the game plans probably change per team, or at least, you know, pretty often. Yeah. I think that's kind of what it is. And we have a coach who hasn't been a coach he's been a coach for a long time, I guess, but not at this level. And we're all waiting to see, you know, does the Waugh experiment work or not? But that small little advantage of being somebody who can actually execute what you're supposed to do in the game plan. And I see this in other sports too. You can look at UFC and see the same thing. It's, you know, there's a game plan. And if you stray from that game plan, you're in danger. It could be over in a hurry.
Yeah. You know what? I'm just going to tell you something. Like, hockey's a simple game. Right? It's a simple game. And when you talk about Colorado's defense, I mean, if you're struggling as a defensive core, this is my strategy, okay? Hockey's a simple game, boys. If the puck's not in our end, the other team's not going to score.
Like it.
Right? You have to have, as a defenseman, you have to play with urgency. And when I say urgency, I mean when your job and your job alone is getting the puck out of the zone. Right? So none of the fluffy passes up the middle, none of the soft passes up the boards. Get that puck high, get it hard, and get it out of danger.
Yeah, it sounds simple. Right? I agree. But it's not simple, right?
And so I say to you this. If the puck's not our end, are they going to score? It's a yes or no question. Now, you could get a guy that's going to fire one from another zone, if lightning strikes, that puck could end up, chipping right off the ice like a stone off water and goes in the net. It's happened before. Has it happened a lot? No.
Right.
Right? So if the puck's not in our zone, and here's another question is, if everybody has a man in the zone, who's going to put the puck in the net?
The guy loses his man.
Right? So if Colorado, we're using the Avalanche, if everybody has a man in their defensive zone, how many times are they going to get scored on a night?
Zero if it works out, right? Well, I mean, there's always a luck factor, but yeah, I get you. I feel you.
Exactly, right? So, I hear there's so much hype about these coaches and their strategies and their this and their that, and it's like, look, good teams play simple hockey, and that's the bottom line.
You think it can become
good teams play simple hockey?
For a player in particular, do you think it can just be overwhelming mentally to understand what you're trying to do?
Yeah. I'm not a fan of defensive zone passes. I'm not a fan. Hockey 101 is you don't carry the puck in your own end. The way these guys are big, they're clogging zones. If I was a coach and we took 100 icings a game, I wouldn't be mad at all.
No.
Get the puck out of the zone. Yeah, get the puck out of the zone and move it.
I like it. I like simple hockey.
Yeah, and say what you want about it, but especially when a team's struggling defensively, if you want to build your defense up, if you want to build their confidence up, get a team that can move the puck out of the zone and get to work and play hockey in their zone. It's just that's what you need to do. And the players accordingly will know if the defenseman's going to whistle it off the boards or off the window. They know what to do, and they can get possession in the neutral zone and, boom, get in there and play some hockey. And that's really, it's even though it's simple, it provides for entertaining hockey too.
It does. I think you're absolutely right, especially with a team like the Avalanche, where we have offense. We just need to be in the offensive zone to have offense.
Yeah,
it's one of those things we get pinned in.
Their magic. Let them play hockey in the ozone. You get so much talent. Play hockey in the offensive zone. That's your whole goal every single night. Does it have to be fancy? No, but get the puck in and get to work.
I hear you. I like the way you think, too. So I'm going to transition a little bit into your next job, one of many, it sounds like. So I imagine this knowledge, this hockey knowledge you have as a coach and a scout, that has to have something to do with why you're doing color commentary, right? I mean, I'm guessing you got an out-of-the-blue call. I'm guessing you didn't do resumes on this one. Somebody came to you for this. And correct me if I'm wrong,
right,
but that's just kind of my feeling on this. This is something where they said this guy knows what he's talking about, and he can't talk about it for people. So let's give him a chance.
Yeah.
Is that how it went?
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, I was doing a show in Canada. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's called Off the Record with Michael Landsberg.
I have. So I came across that from another show. I can't remember the name of it. And I've seen him do some UFC stuff before, too. But yeah, I saw that it looks like it's shutting down or changing path.
Yeah, it's kind of changing the way they do it. They're not doing a half-an-hour show anymore. but really, it's probably the most well-known show in Canada, and it's equivalent. It's on TSN, which is your ESPN.
Gotcha.
So the producer of the OHL Tonight saw me on that show and asked me if I would be willing to, take that position on as color commentator.
And I'm guessing you said yes right away?
No, it's funny because I said, I need a couple weeks to think about it. And I called him back in a couple weeks and asked for a couple more. I was pretty I didn't know if that was the road I wanted to take. You know, as kids, you probably did the same thing. Like, we used to take saran wrap or tin foil and wrap it around like a magic marker or something, and we would use it as our mic and do interviews and, you know, stuff like that, right? Like after road hockey games or pond hockey games, and we'd have a blast doing it. But I never thought that I would end up, you know, actually doing it. So when he called, at that point, I was with the Red Wings doing their amateur draft, you know, for the draft, right? Their amateur scouting. So, you know, it was one of those things where, what road do I want to take here? Do I want to keep scouting at the NHL level, or do I want to get into broadcasting? So it was a long, you know, 4-week process to think it through.
And I hope you don't mind me asking, but you're a family man, right? So you have some considerations there as well. I'm guessing travel comes
absolutely
with some of these jobs.
Yeah, you know, it's you know, when we what happened was the Toledo Storm. I was with Toledo Storm after I left Greenville, and Toledo had a 2-year, it's called a voluntary suspension in the league, to build a new arena. So at that time, I went with Detroit, who's our main team, to work with them, you know, scouting for the draft, which was an amazing opportunity. And then after that 2 years, when the rink was ready, under new ownership, we became the Toledo Walleye, and that's when I took the head scouting job and director of player personnel with them. And decided to do the broadcasting. Because when I talked to my boss in Toledo and I said, look, you know, I have this opportunity to do broadcasting and I'm broadcasting in the same league that I'm scouting in, you know, do you have a problem with that? He was like, no, that's a great opportunity. You got to take it. So that's what I did.
So what's it like getting ready for color commentary versus scouting? I mean, I'm guessing there's still a game plan. You come ready and you learn about the players and say all their names out loud a few times or something like that.
Yeah. Like, you know, it's I do a lot of prep for it because I want to know what their power play is like. I want to know what their penalty kill like, because I'm going to dissect it on the air for you. Right.
Right.
I want to know the players, their top players, you know, the goaltending, just stats, you know, doing their names is a big thing too. Like, we get pronunciation guides, and that's huge, right? Because people get real upset when you mess up names. So you got to be smooth with that. And that takes sometimes a lot of practice, especially when there's some awkward names.
They should just make those available for the fans too. I mean, we're calling people all kinds of different names right now.
Yeah, pronunciation guides are key, right? And it's a lot of times even the pronunciation guides are sometimes wrong, depending on what the player. Like, we have a player in Niagara right now. He was drafted by Minnesota, and his name is Janice, but he likes it Jenny's.
Okay.
Right? So in the pronunciation guide, it'll say J-E-N-I-S. But it's really J-E-N-E-S, Jenny's. So, you know, different things like that. But when you're on the ground level and you can get that kind of information, it provides you know, a better broadcast.
I mean, you're
but
able
preparation,
to with them, right?
Oh, yeah. I talk to, you know, players constantly, and the general manager and the coaches, and
that's got to be hugely valuable for just getting a feel for the game, getting your fingers on the pulse of a team and understanding and, you know, speaking from a place of knowledge instead of just making it up, because nobody will call you out more than a fan. I imagine you get your fair bit of trolling just being a public figure, but it's brutal out there in this brave new world called social media right now for anyone.
Yeah, it is. You're right. You know, and when you, well, you find it, you probably find it too. You're putting yourself out there on your podcast. Right, you open yourself up for criticism, and unfortunately, more people are gonna, the people that are involved in social media that are gonna comment, you're probably gonna get more negative than positive, right? Just because it seems that, you know, it's just like when you read reviews, you know, on a lawnmower you're gonna buy, right? The people that write reviews in the first place are people that are usually complaining. So I don't even get me going on Twitter. You and I could talk for an hour just about that. You know, the people that are on there and some of the comments that you get, you know, from people that, you know, can't even spell hockey that are making comments about it. So you just kind of have to have a thick skin when it comes to that, because there's people that, you know, if they get a reply from you, it's a huge victory.
Right. I mean, whether they're being nice or not, and usually when they're not being
nice. Exactly. They'll try to, and there's some guys, you see, they'll throw 50 lines in the water that night to 50 different people and just try to get one of them to react. Right. And you just can't, react to negativity like that. If someone's going to talk and say something, and it doesn't have to be, you know, if you want to share your opinion, I love it. But if you come after me personally for something, then I'm old school like that. I'm like, let's go for coffee and talk like men if you're going to do that, right? There's a lot of Twitter, how do you say, tough guys.
Yeah, that's true. You know? And you know, the anonymity is the worst part of it, because nobody has to be accountable for anything they say. And I'm with you. I think you hit the nail on the head with that, talking to people. Yeah. And a lot of times when I get trolled, I tell people, okay, well, let's get on the line. Let's talk about it. And nobody ever takes me up on that.
Yeah. Yeah, and that says it right there, right? I mean, you know, it's like I say, you're in the business too, so you're going to get it a lot. But you have these people, and especially you get the accounts that are, these guys are calling themselves hockey insiders.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, dude, you're like, hockey insiders are guys that are in talking to the coaches, and the coaches are telling them stuff knowing that it's not going to go further.
Yeah, I think most of the insiders don't have Twitter accounts.
Yeah, there's one hockey insider, I think, on the planet, really, that is the best, and that's Bob McKenzie.
You know, I get that a lot, and it's a question I have queued up to ask you later is, you know, who do you follow, who do you trust? But I hear that name a lot.
Yeah, I you know, Bob McKenzie is one of those guys. He's an honest guy. He's a trustworthy guy. And over years and years of you know, he wrote for the Hockey News. He was the editor of the Hockey News, and he's on TSN now, that – the ownership, the management, the players trust him in the NHL. So does he get the inside information? Absolutely. Because if the GM of Colorado told him something and said, look, it's off the record, don't say anything, Bob McKenzie's not going to say it. If the GM of Colorado says, Bob, I need you to get this out there, that's what's going to happen. And so Bob's going to be the one to get it out there.
Hold on that thought for a second, because we had a theory, I'm saying basically the people on Twitter with me and the people who listen to this, that the whole Duchesne thing about him getting traded was kind of planted maybe by the owners of the Avalanche, with the idea that it would sort of kickstart him and at the same time kind of test the market to see what he might be worth in a trade. Is that fair, or is that just made up fan stuff right there?
I think a lot of that stuff's just, you know, made up stuff. I think when you get players at this level, do they do things to light fires under them? Yeah, absolutely. But a lot of that stuff takes on a life of its own, right?
It does. I remember them interviewing Matt Duchesne, who had no idea what anybody was talking about and was visibly pissed off about it. He's like, look, I want to stay here. This is where I want to be. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, and unfortunately, stuff like that gets put out there. And there are a lot of people on Twitter that will just literally start rumors just to get attention to their account.
It's true. It's very true.
Yep. You know, and to me, that's the sad part of it. Like, I remember a time when you had to work for what you got, you know, like you had to work to get into broadcast, and you had to work to write at a paper. You had to work to get a podcast. You had to work to do things to get to a level where people are asking you to trust your opinion. And these people want to take the shortcut. They want to start a Twitter account under an alias and just tweet out a bunch of garbage. And I think anyone that knows anything about hockey, about life, don't buy into that stuff.
Yeah, anyway. I agree. Like I was saying, I think there's educated fans out there, and they know. I mean, it's like I said, it's a fun new world with the social media, and there's good and there's bad. But, you know, on the other side, there are some good things. You can hang out with a lot of like-minded people in real time and watch a game and react to it. And I see a lot of people doing that. And that's kind of another life of mine, or another little adventure, is this website called AbsFam, where it's based on that sort of the family with the people who watch it. And we're mostly merchandise. We make shirts and sell those. But that crowd, I mean, that dedicated crowd, they're good people, man. And they know their hockey.
Yeah, that's really, really cool. You know, and that's, like you say, that's the upside of it, right? That's stuff that I love. And every team has that loyal fan base that they just want to share in the game, right? They want to share, in your opinion, they want to share their own opinion. They want to have something to look forward to when they're watching the games. They want to have something to look forward to when news comes out. And I think it's very healthy. I think it's great.
I think so too. And it's something that brings people together who wouldn't otherwise hang out together. Sports is really good that way.
Absolutely. And that's what sport's all about, isn't it?
I think it is. That's what I love about it. And I also love the small cycle where there can be a game that's really bad, but then it's over. And 2 days later, they're playing again and you start over. You don't have to dwell on anything. And, you know, the way people respond is often what makes them the good players. So.
And if it's something you could do that's going to be fun, if it's something that you could do that's going to take your mind off the crappy day you had at work or whatever the problem you have on your mind, if you know, then that to me is huge.
It is, and I'll be honest, I have to catch myself at times when there's a pretty bad loss from the Avalanche. I'm like, I think I might be in a bad mood for this. I mean, I don't want to, you know, put that on everybody else, but I catch myself, and I guess I'm not immune to it. All right, I took us down a rabbit hole there. Let's get back on track here a little bit. So what I've been kind of building up to this idea, too, that you have a lot of knowledge, and you've been around for a long time. This isn't just something that was given to you. You've definitely earned your stripes in this game, and you know what you're talking about. So I'm curious to know what you see the game looking like in 10 years from now, and it could be technology or just the players. And I don't want to prime you too much with it because I have my own ideas, but what do you think this game is going to be like 10 years from now?
You know, there's part of me feels safe about where the game's going to be. And there's another part of me that scares me where it's going to be. And not just at the NHL level, but you have to, you know, you're talking kids, you know, if you're saying the NHL 10 years now, so let's look at kids that are 10 years old right now, right?
Right.
Are they being taught the hockey that we were taught as young kids? We were taught never to be dirty or cheap shots or, you know, kicking a guy when he's down, not literally on the ice, obviously, but that whole mentality, right? There was a lot of really, really old school, phenomenal respect that was taught with the game of hockey. And I see it slowly deteriorating, and it scares me. Like, I know in this area, numbers for hockey are really down. Because, one, it's a tremendously expensive game to play. But there's a lot of parents that are like, I'm just not going to put my kid into that. Because of the culture that is, you know, changing a little bit. The parents, you guys have bad hockey parents there?
Oh, horrible. And actually, I'm just going to alter this out now since we're talking about it. I was going to catch up on this, but I agree with you completely. I grew up playing hockey, could skate before I could walk, still skate better than I walk. And when I walk into a locker room, like my kids just did a couple of camps, the locker rooms are so different, just the respect amongst the players themselves and the kind of the way that they act and how, you know, to be a good player, you basically have to be a hot dog and you have to have the coolest tape and the bag with the wheels on it. And it's changed for me. But
which is really bad. Well, let's talk, like, I mean, I know we're all over the place, but let's just talk about wheels on a bag.
Yeah. I'm glad you're going.
You know,
there.
Like, I was at a game, I was at Niagara game a couple weeks ago, and I actually sent a tweet about it, is that I watched parents, like hockey kids, they were maybe 9-10 years old, and they came in a big group, and every single parent was not carrying the bag. They were rolling their kid's bag. When I was a little guy playing hockey, my dad said, if you're old enough to play hockey, you're old enough to carry your bag.
Yep.
And when you're a little kid, that hockey bag was heavy, but you carried it and you didn't complain about it because that was part of the deal.
It was. And tying your own skates was a big deal too. I got away with it for a little while, but there came a time where if I couldn't tie my skates, I wasn't going on the ice, and I figured it out.
Exactly. You know, and those are the things that the little things that taught you. And you know what? You said you played hockey from a young age. Didn't the things that you learned in hockey, those little respect things, make you a better man off the ice, make you a better man today?
I think so. And actually, when you play the game, it carries over into your real life, and everything's a metaphor of hockey. So the idea, if a goalie has a bad game, it's not so much about that game, it's how does he respond the next game, that sort of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, I had a team meeting with parents one day, and I said, look, I need your help because I'm teaching your kids that hockey is a game of mistakes, that we're all going to make them. We're going to make them every single game, but we are a team, and you are not going to get down on your brother beside you because he made a mistake. You're not going to complain about it. You're not going to get down on him. You're going to pick him up. You're going to pick him up after he makes that mistake. I said, how can I teach your kids that when you're in the stands complaining all game, when you're driving home with little Johnny saying, you know, Tommy really stunk today in net. He let some bad goals in. How am I supposed to get the true meaning of hockey to these kids if you're not willing to behave that way yourself?
Yeah,
and if you can get the parents buying into it, the kids are going to buy into it too.
So let me ask you this. Do you prefer the parents then to just kind of stay out of it, or do you just want them to sort of support what you were talking about right there? Because I've towed the line on both of them myself with my kids in their various sports, is the idea of that, you know, I want to let the coach be the coach, and I'm not going to try to correct this kid's game on the way home in the car. But, you know, at the same time, you're saying that you kind of support what the coach is saying too, and, you know, not let these guys get down on their goalie, or, you know, not tell them yourself that the goalie lost the game for you. So is it one of those things where it's almost better just to stay out of it and not be that loud guy in the stands?
Well, if you're yelling in the stands, you got a problem. You know, I was at a game. One of my buddies has a kid. He's around 8 years old. And I went to the game, and these parents are yelling every 3 seconds, shoot, shoot, pass, pass. And I'm sitting there going, what the heck is wrong with you people? These are kids playing a game. They're playing a game. They don't need you yelling at them. Like, the one kid just looked right up at the stands because, you know, his dad was yelling, shoot, shoot, and the kid actually stopped, you know, almost like a deer in a headlight going, what do I do? Like, let them play. It's a game, right? Yeah. And if you're gonna be that dad or that mom that's going to be in the stands yelling, you got a big problem. You have a big problem. And I think too many parents are trying to live their life. You know, they failed at high school hockey, or they failed at this, and now they're trying to live their dreams through their kid. And that kid, don't kid yourself, is feeling that pressure.
They're feeling
that pressure.
There was an article that came out about this recently. I don't know if you saw it. I can't remember who wrote it, but he's an NHLer, and he put it out there off the Players Tribune, I think it was, but just about the abuse, the physical abuse he got from his dad if he lost, and just he got good through fear and all that. And, oh, man, that hits home for me because I've been so hypervigilant to never be that guy that, you know, my parents were maybe a little over the line with the screaming and yelling, but luckily I didn't listen or couldn't hear them. But from all accounts, they were those parents. And you know what? I don't think you should be. I think that you're right. People are trying to live through their kids, and that's not a good way to live.
They are. So that's the part that scares me about the culture of it. You know, that if you look at a guy like – if you look at a player, let's tie it to Colorado, Jerome Iginla.
Okay.
Right?
Yep.
He's an ambassador to the game of hockey as far as I'm concerned.
He is a fascinating man in addition to being an excellent, you know, Hall of Famer, really.
Yeah, this guy's an athlete. He's a gentleman. He's a gentleman, right? On the ice, he performs, he competes. And, yeah, if you do something to him, he's going to drop his gloves and take you on, right? He's a man's man. And to me, a guy like that is an ambassador to hockey. A guy like Jonathan Toews is an ambassador to hockey. You know, there's that saying, you know, some people say, what would Jesus do, right? In hockey, it's what would Gretzky do?
It's funny.
Right?
There was a shirt floating around for a couple of years. What would Joe Sakic do? So, yeah, I feel you. I know where you're at.
Joe Sakic, same thing, an ambassador to hockey. You know, did you ever hear him mouthing off?
You didn't. And if you ever saw him even open his mouth towards a ref when there was a penalty against him, you knew that he was really offended by the call. Like, it happened rarely, like maybe once every 4 seasons, and you knew it was a big deal, and he really felt like he'd been wronged.
Because Joe Sakic is, to me, what defines hockey.
It's
what defines hockey. It's you're a gentleman off the ice. You're gonna treat people well. You're going to go out and compete. You're going to be a leader, not by being a shish boom bomb guy, just by being that Stevie Eiserman, same cut, right?
Yep.
Quiet leader. That these guys go out there and they lead by example, and they're not dirty, right? Jerome Iginla's not dirty, but he's tough.
Yeah, he's not dirty, but he can get mean if he wants to.
He gets mean, and I'm okay with that. I'm okay with mean hockey. I'm okay with that. You want to look a guy square in the eyes and tee up, I'm good with it. But you want to spear a guy from behind, you want to yap at a guy from the other side of the linesman's elbow, to me there's no room for that in hockey.
Yeah, and you still see that at all levels, but I agree with you. I think that maybe we don't have the same amount of ambassadors that are doing that as we used to. But, you know, I often wonder, is it me or is it the reality of the situation? Because no parents like their kids' music, or, you know, they don't understand that crazy noise anymore. And I wonder if it's just not, if it's just the natural progression that, you know, we become a little bit put out by what we're seeing in the younger generation, but it was just kind of what happened before and what happened before. I mean, there's arguments to be made that, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I do a lot of public speaking, right, with the testicular cancer, and I talk about mental illness and just my experiences, and I talk to a lot of kids that are, you know, maybe from age 12 to 19 or so, and I'm telling you, I'll leave high schools saying, feeling pretty good about the future. If you can get these kids to get rid of all the present-day weight on their shoulders, right? If you can get them to get rid of their, turn their cell phone off, you know, just plug into you for this hour. Some of the things that these kids are saying, the way they're behaving is making me feel good about it. These kids are no different than us as kids. It's no different than the kids before us. No different. They kind of get a bad rap because of the bad ones in the group, right? And with the social media, with everything in the limelight, we see that parents fighting in the crowd. We see this spoiled kid do this. We see this, we see that. But if the adults of today take the time to pass that message on to these kids instead of writing them off, I think there's hope there. I really do. And you know what my dream would be for the NHL? My dream is that every team would actually have a full-fledged, on-the-payroll mentor so that when these kids can come up, that come into the NHL, you know, in Detroit, you could have a guy, and it doesn't matter how old, let's say a guy like Ted Lindsay.
That's a good guy. Right? Yeah.
Right? A guy like Ted Lindsay that is a guy that these players can talk to. He's a guy that he can talk to the players as far as, look at, you know, I played with the Red Wings in the 50s, 60s, 70s. This is how we conducted ourselves on and off the ice. This is the structure of this hockey team. This is what we take pride in. This is the way you guys should be, you know, with people in the media or whatever the case is. Do you see where I'm coming from?
I do, yeah. I think it's a great idea.
You know, to have that guy and a Sakic, Jerome McGinley, guys like these. And that's what I love about Colorado's organization. Look who they got, right? Look who they have in positions of power. They have mentors. They have Hall of Famers there. They have guys that played the game honestly. Patrick Roy is a guy who played the game honestly. You know, Joe Sakic's a guy that played the game honestly. These are guys that could be a mentor with any organization. And I give a lot of credit to the ownership in Colorado that they have these guys in place. I love it.
I mean, they're all great individually, but together you get that chemistry. And it may not be the on-ice chemistry, but it's the same chemistry. I mean, these guys spend a lot of time on the road together. They spend a lot of time in locker rooms together. And a lot of them, when you hear them talking about what they missed most when they retired, is the hanging out with the guys. It's the bus rides and the plane flights and things like that. Yeah. You know, they miss that camaraderie. So I think it's good.
What's the culture? What culture do you want in the organization? Right? Like, do you want the culture to last years and years and years and years? Like, you've seen a lot of teams go through their ups and downs, right?
Right.
But when you have a team that believes in their culture, if you look at a team like the Detroit Red Wings, you know, this is a team that some way or another, they win.
They've been relevant for so long.
Yeah, and it's because when you put on that jersey, when you put on that Red Wings jersey, when you step into that locker room, you have a responsibility. And the culture is winning. The culture is being a good person. And if every organization would take that on, I think it would be really, really great for the game, and you would keep that old school respect in the game. You know, and I think if you could do that, I think the game's going to stay the best game in the world.
I think it wouldn't be bad to do it with guys who are retiring, you know, who are going to have that transition, because that can't be easy from being an NHLer for, you know, however long you were to not being an NHLer. I'm sure some guys can pull it off, and you hear stories about the really popular ones like Peter Forsberg and what he does, but that's not going to be the reality for every player. So I think you're right. I think the organization, especially the Avalanche, have done a good job of making sure that they help these guys towards the end of their career. Like Alex Tanguay is probably near the end of his career, and I think he's already been talking about he's going to do something within the club. I really like to hear stuff like that.
Yeah.
And these guys give their health and everything they've got for years and years and years, so I think that it should be something that the NHL and the teams look at as a way to give back and also to take care of their guys.
Sure.
So I've got you almost at an hour now, and I would like to ask you a couple of rapid-fire questions if you don't mind. But first...
Yeah.
The reason I found you and how I learned about you was from the Check Yourself, Express Yourself tag. I saw it. I was curious what it was all about. Do you mind just telling me a little bit about how that came to be and how people can help you to support that?
Yeah, like I'm a testicular cancer survivor. So Check Yourself obviously is, and I don't want to limit just to men. I want women to be a part of this too, because obviously breast cancer is a big, big, scary thing. You know, it's a reality, just like testicular cancer. And I know with Movember, prostate cancer gets a lot of attention. I want to bring attention to testicular cancer because I went through it. And, Cam, it took me 2 weeks to tell someone that I had a lump on my testicle. It took me 2 weeks because I was embarrassed, right? Because it's a private spot on your body, and guys don't want to talk about it. And you grew up in the game of hockey, right? You're a little – you don't want – sound like you're weak, or you don't want to sound like whatever the case is, and if I didn't tell anyone, I'd be dead right now.
Right, and yeah, and you don't want to sound like I was just... I'm sorry, go ahead.
I had the most aggressive form of testicular cancer there, embryonic carcinoma, and it was moving fast, and it spread to my lymph nodes. I had two tumors behind my abdominal wall. If I would have waited a little bit longer to tell someone, I would have been dead. And that's not to sound dramatic. That's the reality of it. So I urge every talk that I do, I urge guys to make sure you check your testicles. And how you do that is you do it either in the shower or right after the shower, because the scrotum looses up and you can actually feel around them, feel for lumps. They might be painful. They might not be painful. But feel for any lumps. And if you do have any tenderness, any sensation, if you feel anything that worries you, get to a doctor and get to a doctor right away and get it looked at.
How long ago did you find out that you had testicular cancer?
It was 1996.
So that was a while back. How long did it take you to get better, or are you better?
You know, it was 5 years after I lost my dad to liver cancer.
Wow.
My dad died when I was 21. And so, you know, it kind of hit me hard, but it was a long fight. I went through 3.5 months of high-dose chemo after surgery, and since January of 1997, I've been cancer-free.
That's awesome, man. And I'm glad you're not dead, by the way.
Yeah, thank you very much. It would have been a tough podcast for you today.
Yeah, it would have been a little dry, probably, yeah.
Yeah. The second part of that, Cam, Express Yourself, is it ties in with not only, you know, the checking yourself and telling someone, but I tie it into the mental illness thing that, you know, it's that same stigma, right, that people are embarrassed to say that you're feeling down. You know, you could be what the staggering notes is 21 million people that suffer from depression. Only half of those tell someone.
Right, because nobody wants to appear weak. Nobody wants to be that guy.
Yeah. You know, like, again, that any kind of sports culture, if you say, oh, you know, I'm feeling down today, what? You know, don't be such a wussy, right? And right. We need to eliminate that. We need to eliminate. Darren McCartney, who played with Detroit, he's out there talking about mental illness, and he was one of the toughest guys that played in the NHL.
He was. We know him well.
Yeah. You guys had so many battles with them, right? He's out there saying, like, look, I suffer from mental illness. You know, Mike Babcock is out there talking about it. Players are now getting, thank God, after years of people wanting, but teams are getting therapists on staff that they can go and talk to someone and share their feelings or share whatever's going on. I mean, we all go through different depressions in our life, whether you lost someone you love, whether you break up with a girlfriend, regardless of what the case is, we've gone through it. You need to share that stuff. And if you're going through it every day, if you wake up and you don't feel joy or you feel there's no light at the end of the tunnel, that's the time where you need to share. That's the time you need to tell someone. I think what's more important about that is that we, as friends or brothers or sisters or whatever the case is, have to be plugged into the people around us. We have to be good listeners. If I see you, Cam, and I say, you know what, I noticed you're acting a little different today. What's going on? Do you want to talk? Right? People don't take that time. People aren't plugged in. They're looking at their phones or they're doing this. Take the time to plug into the people around you and look for signs, look for symptoms. And even if you see something or you don't, let them know that, hey, I'm an outlet for you if you need to talk.
Yeah, I like it. And we've talked about this three different times in three contexts in this podcast alone, but you have to put yourself out there in this case too. And that's what I think you're doing. I think you're awesome for doing it. And it was the main reason I wanted to talk to you. You're fascinating otherwise too, but I really love the message and what you're saying, man. I'm sorry I cut you off there, but I had to get that out before I forgot about it.
I really appreciate the fact that you reached out and talked to me. I mean, that to me is really what it's about. And if that message could be spread a little bit in your circle, we're doing some good things here today.
It will be, for sure. And I'm glad that you spent some time on that. I know that I'm coming up against the time that I had allocated for us. So I've got a whole page of questions in front of me. I'm going to start with just three of them that are really interesting, and then we'll see where we're at from there. So what advice would you give to your 20-year-old self then? And it sounds like that was right before some craziness in your life for sure. So I mean, what do you know now that would have helped you out back then? What would you say to yourself?
Well, I could tie it into my son because he's 23 right now.
Okay.
And he graduated with his honors in history, and he's got his teacher certificate. He went to teacher's college. And my biggest thing I say to him is be happy. As cliche as that sounds, find a job. And you went to university to be a teacher. If you have changed your heart on that or if you want to do something else, do it. You know, follow a path that will make you happy, because everything else doesn't matter. Get a job that's going to make you happy. Find a passion that's going to make you happy, a hobby, or whatever the case is. You know, and I really, really believe that. You know, so many of us get into situations where we don't want to be in, right? You finish school. Maybe you're a little bit lost on what you want to do. Well, take the time and find yourself before you commit yourself to something that you don't want to do.
Yeah, some of that's reflection. Sometimes you got to put the phone down, you got to get off the computer and just stare at a wall, think it over, you know, be a little bit aware of who you are and where you're at. But I like what you're saying there too. I personally believe that the only thing that's truly valuable is time. And if you spend your time not being happy, then you're wasting your time. You can't get that back. You can get money, you can get another career, you can do whatever you want that way. But
absolutely,
you know, spend all your time in the pits of the world or wishing that you had it better, you're probably wasting your time.
Yeah, I totally agree.
All right. So the next one then is, and it's interesting coming off the heels of that, is when you think of success, who's the first person that comes to mind?
Wow, that is a great question.
And, you know, you can define success however you want, but it's kind of the point of the question is, you know, who do you think is successful? And it doesn't have to be some star or Ovechkin, whoever your favorite player is. Probably not Ovechkin.
Ovechkin. you know, success, I really can't think of one person. I hope that's okay. I look at success as doing what you love to do. You know, there's a lot of successful, quote unquote, people that are, you know, in Fortune 500 companies and driving around in jets and all that stuff, but that doesn't mean they're successful in their heart. You know, for me, for someone that is doing what they love to do and have the peace of mind, that they're plugged into people around them, that they're good family people, and giving, then to me, that's really successful.
That's awesome. Do you think that you're in that area then, successful under those terms?
Yeah, I'm grateful. You know, if your definition of me is successful, then I'm thankful that you think that way. But for me, I'm very, very grateful because one, I'm alive, right?
Right.
Two, I have a great family. Three, I'm doing what I love to do. Do I have the ups and downs of life? Absolutely. Do I have stressful days? Yes. Do I have days where I'm feeling down or not feeling right about things? I do. But for the whole, I'm very, very grateful of where I am right now, and I wouldn't change it for a minute. You know, as far as family goes, as far as profession goes, I love it. I love the game of hockey. To be able to be making a living in that game is something that I've always dreamed of, and I'll never, ever take it for granted.
Oh, it's rare and precious for sure. I mean, the people I've talked to all seem to get that too. There's nobody who's just kind of riding this out. Everybody who's involved is because they want to be, and when they wake up, they're not dreading going to work.
No, it's fantastic.
So if you could put something out there for the entire world to see, say it was a billboard in the middle of Times Square, what would you put on it? You could put anything you want there for any reason.
Man, you got some good questions.
I'm digging deep on these, you know?
Yeah. You're going to think this is really, really cliche, but it would be love, everybody.
I think that's a great one, actually. I think there's not enough of that going around.
You know, if the bottom line is, if you think about this for a sec, if love was the foundation for everything, man, we'd be living in a beautiful world. Right?
We would.
If love was the foundation for everything, meaning if you, because if you look at love as far as being the bottom of the pyramid, if you look at everything that comes from that, respect, trust, understanding, passion, purpose, like everything kind of comes from that one category. And if you could have that, if everyone would treat people with that as the foundation, you know, I think we're kind of getting into the lines of heaven right now.
Yeah, well,
heaven.
For anyone who has a problem with that word love or saying that that's a foundation, I think if you flip it around, you can get most people to agree that everybody wants to be loved. They want to be popular. They want to have respect from people. And I think it's the same sort of thing. Just, you know, pick your terms, pick your words, whatever you're comfortable with. But on the other side of that, you have to give that to other people too. You can't just crap on everybody to get the love you need.
You know, you're exactly right. And in hockey, we have a saying, it says, the more you give the puck, the more you get the puck.
I could have used that when I was about 10. I had this idea that I was great with the puck and never gave it up. But yeah, that's another metaphor that came through in life later.
I just gave you an idea for a t-shirt.
Yeah, maybe, right? You'd be surprised how many of those we got. So did you ever want to play in the NHL?
Oh, yeah.
Was that, everybody else in the world, that was your goal, right?
Yeah.
Over time, 4 seconds left, you score. So what kind of player would you have been, do you think?
I was okay. I played 3 years a junior. You know, for that level, I was good, but after that, obviously, I didn't go further, right? But things are different now than they even were. There's a lot more opportunity now to play. You know, there's a lot more leagues and things like that. And it was just, I got into my life. It was like, hockey's over now, and, you know, time to proceed into getting a job and doing that, right? So, was I even close to being an NHL player? No way.
Yeah, I think a lot of guys forget that, especially guys in the beer league. I think many of them think there's a scout in the stands and all they have to do is go out there and take over the game.
Yeah, no, it doesn't work that way, right?
That was an interesting answer. I expected you to give me a player's name. Like, I'm pretty certain that if I had to guess myself in the NHL, I would have been an agitator. As much as that bothers me, it's just a natural skill I have on the ice. I got this fight or flight thing, and on the ice, I'm usually in the fight game. So, and not necessarily, throwing punches and things like that, just the way my mind works, I think I would have been that guy that was hated by most teams except for the one I'm on, which is sad because I'd rather be the, power forward Peter Forsberg kind of guy.
So were you a Claude Lemieux then, or?
No, I mean, I never played anything close to the levels that you played at, but I was a guy with a great shot and I was big, so I didn't go around people. I went through them, and eventually the other guys got big and it was over. So I gave that up and decided to be a rock star, which also didn't work out so well. All right, one more question for you and then I will let you go.
Okay.
Well, actually, one more question, and then if you don't mind, I'd like for you to tell people what you're up to, where they can find you, and what you have going on. But before we get to that, we talked about this a little bit earlier. You said Bob McKenzie is a guy that you follow. Who are a couple other people that that you would suggest people follow to get legit hockey news, worthwhile articles, things like that?
I would follow Jeff Merrick.
Okay.
He works for Sportsnet in Canada. He covers the Canadian Hockey League and the NHL. He's a guy, I think he's got 120,000 followers right now.
That says something.
Adam Proto is a guy that I would follow. He was a writer with the Hockey News for years and years and years. He's a guy that carries a lot of weight in the hockey world as well. Those are the three guys I would say as far as, you know, top guys that I would follow in the hockey world as far as, you know, updated information, things like that.
Right. And not just one team specific, but those guys, I follow two of them, I believe. I think they all are pretty general to the whole league.
They are. Adam
Merrick's
Proto,
with, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, Merrick's with Sportsnet. He has a podcast as well, but he's an anchor on Sportsnet, so he's got a lot of TV exposure, and he's right in the thick of things. So
I think everyone should have a podcast. Why don't you have a podcast? You're so good at this.
I don't know. It's a great question.
You should, right? Out of it. Yeah, if you ever think about it, let me know, and I'll help you however I can.
Yeah, that's great.
So for the people who are listening and also for myself, what are your goals for next year? What are you up to? What's got you inspired?
You know, just for me, as far as the broadcast, is getting better every game. I take it as a challenge. It's been a long road to hone the craft. Have you ever spoke in front of a camera?
I have, and I don't appreciate it at all, but I'm really good on the other side of a camera, actually.
Yeah, so, you know, for me, getting comfortable with the camera has been something that I feel that I've really improved on. As far as seeing the game and explaining to you at home, the viewer, you know, things that you can't see on camera, I want to show that to you. So that, to me, is something that really drives me as far as the broadcasting, scouting. I just want to be the best scout I can be, provide as much information I can for my bosses. The hockey clinics have me going. I'm really, really amping up the public speaking in 2016 with the Check Yourself, Express Yourself, you know, doing school tours and things like that. And I'm really looking forward to that.
And so I was going to ask you what your ask would be for the people out there listening to this, people everywhere. And I'm guessing it has to do with the Check Yourself, Express Yourself. Is that what you would want to leave with people if they forgot everything else in this podcast and took one thing from it? Would that be a good one?
Well, I think for as far as in general, those two things, you know, that Check Yourself, Express Yourself is huge. I mean, I'd love to create more awareness and do what I can to get people thinking straight so we can get rid of that stigma. So people don't have to be embarrassed if they have breast cancer or testicular cancer or depression or things like that, that it's going to be an open dialogue and people can share. You know, you mentioned about sharing with your podcast for the hockey games, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, can you imagine having the same thing but for Check Yourself, Express Yourself, where people can actually communicate with each other and talk to each other about things, or even if it's just to share what they went through in that day, if it's a guy that's scared that he found a lump on his testicle, that he has someone to go to and kind of talk to me, that would be my goal. I mean, I'd love to see something like that that's interactive, that it's a place where people can go and get into that arena, that discussion could be had. People can share their experiences. I mean, we all have stories that will inspire someone else.
Right, just like, you know, yours right now. I mean, that's what
exactly.
This is all about.
And I bet you could tell me stories from your life, Cam, that things that you've experienced or things that you went through that are going to help me in my life and inspire me to do things in my life. And I think if we can get to that point that we can share our stories and learn from one another, that's huge. So that would be a huge goal.
I'll just put this out there for you right now. I'll be that guy. If you have people who are willing to tell their story, I'll be the guy who records it and puts it online or work with you to put it on one of your things. I would be happy to do that because I value these just as much as you.
No, I'd love that. I mean, I'd love to, you know, this thing is kind of taking on a life of its own. You know, just from people like yourself that want to get involved. And I think the more people we can get involved, and the more voices would be outstanding. And so, you know, you look at just you making that email, you know, contacting me through my website, look what it's done. It's brought you and I together, and hopefully we can have a relationship going forward. And who knows, for the people that are out there listening that are saying, you know what, maybe I am going to talk to someone tonight. Maybe, you know, this is what's been going on. And if we can just get people to to follow that path. If we can get people out of their shell or whatever the case is, or not have the embarrassment to tell someone, we could be doing really, really good things together.
I think that's a win all the way around.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, last thing is, and I'm not going to ask you for your full roster of ways to follow you and things like that. Just tell me which is the best way to keep up on the things you're doing. Are you more of a Twitter guy, or should they be at your Facebook? Which is the best way to follow you?
I do, like, Burkholder Hockey has a Facebook page where you can kind of go and there's a lot of check yourself, express yourself on there as well. So to get people to like that page would be awesome, to get people sharing their thoughts or whatever via that page would be fantastic. You can follow me at Twitter at eBurkHockey Inc. So it's at eBurkHockey Inc. You know, anyone that wants to reach out to me, I'll respond to you. And if we could kind of get something like that, like whether it's via Twitter to get some, you know, interaction,
right.
Get people's thoughts, you know, especially if they heard your podcast and send a note saying they heard it and, you know, whether it helped them, whether they want to tell me I'm a goof, whatever the case is, you know, it'd be great to see some feedback.
That would be awesome. I'll put that out there for sure. And all of the information that you've listed is going to be put in the show notes as well. So they can just click right from the page itself to get to it. And then this will be on iTunes as well. So yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really awesome talking with you, and I appreciate your time. Like I said, you're a fascinating guy, and wouldn't mind talking to you in the future if we can work it out.
No, I appreciate that. And one footnote, Cam, like you got a hold of me through my website at burkholder.com.
Right.
If there are people that, you know, especially guys that have questions that might be a little bit scared about testicular cancer, or they feel something going on or whatever, or anyone that wants to reach out to me can reach out to me via that contact page on my website.
That was one of my favorite podcasts so far, and I really have to thank Ed for coming on the show and sharing his story and for being so outgoing and putting himself out there. I think everybody should do it, and I think that Ed's really good at doing it. So I hope you like this, and if you did, go and subscribe on iTunes. Just go to iTunes and search for ColoradoHockey.com, or just go to the website and click on the iTunes button. This show, as always, was brought to you by ABSFAM, ABSFAM.com. And lastly, Merry Christmas, everyone.